Football Show with Andy Lamb and Sasha Shipway.
Hi, it's Andy. Welcome to the Netball Show with Mizuno. Recovered from the World Cup yet? No, us neither. This episode, Tamsin reflects on the World Cup.
You know, there's lots of sponsors that will jump on board big competitions for the immediate benefits. I think what Vitality have proven, that there's loads of other ways to help out of sport, and that was such a great idea. Like, all the goals scored and tallied up in the fan park as well, we're going to be funding level one coaches, and yeah, to get 114 level ones out of that, that's incredible.
Hannah from Sky Sports Netball tells us about what it was like bringing every game live.
So the first 4 days, of course, we had the two courts, and what that meant was that we had to have two full production trucks, one covering each court, and then within that you had sort of split shifts, because obviously the first matches were starting early in the morning and they weren't finishing till late. So there was literally a cast of hundreds the first 4 days, doing some on the morning, some on the afternoon.
And Frankie Wells, ahead of Nets Worlds in just 4 days' time.
If this was bigger and it was the same as netball, I think I would play Nets more than I would play netball. Ever since I went to the first training session, I fell in love with it. And I say to everyone I meet, I would rather, if I could, if it was bigger or whatever, I'd rather play Nets than netball.
Tamsin has been telling us about her memories of the Netball World Cup in Liverpool. Tamsin, World Cup out the way. I'm not sure you were there, actually, because I only saw you 30 seconds in the corridor.
Yeah, it was one of those, wasn't it? I was expecting to catch up with everybody, and we worked very hard. It was an amazing 11 days spent in Liverpool, but I was certainly happy for the rest at the end of it.
And a happy kind of crazy, really, as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was indeed. Like, what a World Cup. I know going into it, we said it was going to be the best ever, and that's my fourth World Cup I've been involved in, three as a player and now one working. And to see it unfold as it did, you know, we've never had two semi-finals as close as they were. And I know it ended up being an Australia-New Zealand final. However, you know, what a journey the Kiwis have been on, and the performances from South Africa and the talking points around Jamaica. And yeah, it was pretty special.
Tell me about one of those typical days. And didn't you have something like a 5 o'clock start?
So yeah, we were getting in for makeup. My alarm was set most days for 5:30. We were getting into makeup between 6 and 6:30. And then, I think probably the marathon day was the Thursday. So we had six games pretty much back to back. So we were live on air from about 8 o'clock in the morning till 9 o'clock at night, or something crazy like that. So it was a mad day. But, you know, that was a great day because we saw Australia, New Zealand. We saw England play that day. So, yeah, it was... We had some very long days, but, you know, I've said before, when you don't play or coach, it's the next best job. Yeah. And you're still part of a team, like everybody from who you're presenting with to production to all the people behind the scenes. Like, it was a pretty awesome event for us to be involved in.
I saw Pam one of the afternoons in the hotel, and she didn't have any shifts, so she was just pleased to have a few hours to herself, really.
Yeah, well, you do, because you get a bit brain dead. Like, you're seeing, the 60 games across the week, and you're seeing majority of those. And even if you're not, like, I didn't do any of the commentary. I was there to do analysis and be in the studio for all the games, which I was what I wanted to do, and I absolutely loved it. But, you know, swinging from Singapore, Sri Lanka to South Africa, Jamaica to, you know, Zimbabwe. And I think what people forget with the media and with netball as well is it's the first time we've seen a lot of these teams as well. There's not that much access or footage or information around some of these teams. So we're learning and trying to prep and do as much stuff as we can, even from everything from making sure we get the pronunciations right to all the information. We had a great Todd Miller with us that had that after stat, which was incredible. It was a really fun event, but we were a bit brain fried by the end of it.
I spoke to Jenny as well, and she said that she really enjoyed the stuff you did in that big massive teapad.
Yeah, definitely. I think the analysis side is something that Sky excel at. I think that's probably the big difference between them and in any sport. You know, the way they show sport is is the best of the best. And it was a big deal for us. Like, we wanted to go there and we wanted to do analysis and show the technical side. And we've had such positive feedback from it, in the sense that, you know, people haven't seen it like that before and seen it regularly like that, and how teams break down each other and the tactical stuff. And that's kind of my strength. And I was pretty vocal at the start with Sky that I wanted to do that rather than do the commentary, because I actually think that's where I'm best suited. And I think both Shani and Jenny and those guys, they were like, you know, we could do far more of this in Australia and New Zealand. And, you know, it's full credit to Sky for giving me the opportunity to do that, to get the touchscreen down, and all the guys to give in the extra sessions, because it was so much fun.
Did you get time to see lots of people you hadn't seen in ages?
For literally about a minute at a time. Like, I tried to catch up with as many people as possible, and when you walk, and you know, there were so many blasts from the past as well. I saw some of my Avon County ladies, we saw people from Bath, I saw people from Storm, and then obviously all the Wasps lot, and then the usual netballers. So it was a really nice opportunity to say hi and how's it all going and blah blah blah. And yeah, I made sure that I did that every day as well, because it's, you know, I think that's what netball's all about. People just want a few minutes of your time to talk and reflect on the day and give opinions and have a laugh. And yeah, it was lovely.
Legacy isn't really a new word in netball, but the fact that Vitality are going to be funding those level one coaches, I think it was something like 114. That's,
yes,
very impressive.
Yeah, well, I said before, the comp, what a great sponsor activation that was. You know, there's lots of sponsors that will jump on board big competitions for the immediate benefits. I think what Vitality have proven, that there's loads of other ways to help out of sport, and that was such a great idea. Like, all the goals scored and tallied up in the fan park as well, we're going to be funding level one coaches. And yeah, to get 114 level ones out of that, that's incredible. And I think that's what's important to me. It's really easy to throw around buzzwords. It's really easy for important people to stand up and say, we want legacy, we want momentum, we want this. But it's actually putting that into action. And something like that has now given us some action. You know, 114 more coaches, and who knows who those coaches will be, who they'll end up inspiring, what they'll end up beginning. And so that was pretty special.
Those players from the Super League last season scored something like 1,000+ goals as well.
I think just how it all ties in across our Super League. And we know, like, one of the big things when we talk about legacy and momentum for me is how we do tie into the domestic competition. Super League is key in that. You know, it's really easy for people to get on board and follow the big competitions, the World Cups, the Commonwealth Games. But actually, if we can transfer that now into the week in, week out competitions, where you're seeing these world-class players play and you're getting a fan base and a following from that, then, you know, the sport will reap the rewards.
We may as well start with the winners, New Zealand. Nalene, and what she's done since August, giving her side the confidence back.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. She gave them their culture and their identity back. She gave them a style of play that fitted. She brought in a couple of key players that, you know, are the best in the world. I think the performance from Casey Corpur was just incredible. And I also think, you know, I'm a big fan of experience. I think that's so important for a side, and you saw how everybody thrived off that. For me, she was a game changer. I've raved about her as a coach. I think everybody knows, I think she's one of the best coaches in the world. Her tactical knowledge is incredible. And I was wary of them. And during the week, I've been talking about, you know, I was worried if we got New Zealand in the semi-final, I'd much have preferred Australia. And that wasn't a disrespect to Australia, it's just the way the Kiwis played. And yeah, I mean, they got a lot of fans in there, and I think in that final it was quite interesting, because if you weren't an Aussie supporter, you were literally supporting New Zealand.
Australia press at the minute, they're a bit in panic mode, have you seen?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm kind of caught in two minds about this. The reality is, Australia have been such a dominant force for so long, you know, at some point the rest of the world was going to catch up. You can't keep on winning forever. It just doesn't work like that. So you know, to lose the Commonwealth Games by one and to lose the World Cup final by one, it is what it is. They are still one of the best teams in the world, and they're still feared by a lot of people. And on any given day, they could have won that competition. I think probably their biggest downfall from this is what they did in the semi-final. And I still believe that they perhaps hadn't learnt their lessons from the Commonwealth Games as well, because the reality is, if you look at New Zealand and how they came through at the crucial times, the big name players were totally on the pace in the game and completely connected with each other. And I think by Australia resting some of those big players the day before, I would argue as a player, not that I've got anything to do with that side or know how they all affect mentally, but I would argue as a player, I know I would have wanted to have played in the semi-final before I played in the grand final. So I just think they've left themselves a little bit wide open for criticism because of what they did. But if you look at the reality and the stats, you know, it could have, England, Australia and New Zealand were a step above every other team there.
Scotland and Ireland finished higher than the last World Cup, didn't they? But they still didn't make the top eight, so they'll be a bit disappointed about that.
Yeah, I think they'd set their targets on trying to break into that top eight. I think Scotland did. I'm not sure what Northern Ireland's targets were, but you know, Scotland going in ranked seventh in the world as well. Yeah, of course they will be disappointed, but I think it's the same thing. We often look at the African nations and the Caribbean nations and say, oh, well, they don't get as much against the other teams. Well, neither do Northern Ireland and Scotland, and I think that's probably their, you know, they're having to adapt and adjust to playing an African nation to then a Caribbean nation to them. You know, it's difficult for them. So I think there was great improvements. I think you could see that from the sides, but I think there's been great improvements around the world. You know, they had some close games. I think there were some star players. I think what Scotland did with Emma Barry was really smart, because at 17 years old, she is now on the journey to be their target shooter, which is what they need. It was great for Caroline O'Hanlon to get out there for Northern Ireland and prove that she's a world beater on the top stage. But yeah, I think there was lots of learning points for them. I think they'll still take massive positives from it. And it just shows to me that actually, if you keep giving these teams exposure against each other, they will only get better.
Our Aussie media colleagues were saying, oh, well, Emma Barry is going to be off to Australia next year and stuff. So I spoke to Gail afterwards and she just said, no, she's staying here.
Yeah, she's still so young. I don't think, you know, you'd look at the likes of people like George Fisher and stuff getting opportunities out there first. Emma Barry, the improvement over a season has been immense, just how much stronger she's got and take on the ball. I think for me it was just a smart move from Scotland, because actually she's ready to start playing at this level. She's still got shed loads to learn, which you'd expect from any 17-year-old, but just think how lethal she's going to be in the next 4 years. So you know, if she keeps improving and keeps going, and it's important for shooters as well, because it's harder. I think it's far easier coming in as a young defender with almost nothing to lose than it is with carrying the pressure of shooting the goals. You know, if you look at that World Cup final, the pressure that Folau and Akinazio, Bassett and Wood were under, it's immense. So, you know, for her to get that opportunity at such a young age will only help her grow.
I think I saw your tweet, wasn't it, when Bongi greeted you with a nice dance and a scream?
Yeah.
She was always really fun to have a word with after the games. So the sheer fact that South Africa have done well and the African nations have been in the top eight, that's looking good for 2023, isn't it?
Yeah, it is indeed. Like, South Africa have been growing, and under Norma Plummer they've got to this point. And I think for them, they did such a good job against Jamaica. It's an amazing semi-final against Australia. I think it was just that consistency, and I know I harped on a lot about their bench, which everyone gets very offended about, but the reality is, you know, they probably weren't able to rest players the same as some of the top three nations at crucial times, so they were always having to back up. But I think for South Africa, they showed that at any given time they can compete. It's now about that consistency, and they will have to work at that youth and development the next group through to make sure they've got that 2023. And as for some of the other African nations, wow, like Zimbabwe, I think, captured the hearts, just like Malawi Queens did and then Uganda did in previous years. So there's some real stars and some real athletes in those teams. And yeah, I really hope that World Netball get involved to make sure that 2023, it's not five teams, we're actually talking about eight teams competing.
Hannah Wilkes was part of the Sky Sports Netball team, who did a great job covering every game live. Like me, I think we're both still getting over it.
At the moment, it's all one massive blur. It's just, it was absolutely fantastic from start to finish. But I saw a couple of people on Tuesday when I got back to real life, and everyone was like, how was it? And I was just like, it was awesome. But I can't tell you much more than that at the moment. You know, when you've been so wrapped up in something, you almost need a bit of distance from it. Like, it was absolutely brilliant. Really enjoyed it. But 10 days, busy days, long days, non-stop netball, which is, you know, kind of the dream. But yeah, I feel like I still need a couple of days before I can properly look back and process it. But I know I enjoyed myself, and I know it was a fantastic tournament, I can tell you that much.
I was telling Tamsin as well a bit earlier, just the sheer fact that yes, we saw each other, but it was nothing more than 30 seconds in the corridor or to wave people at a distance, that kind of thing.
It literally was, wasn't it? I think I probably saw you every day, but literally in passing, just like, hi, you're right, yep, carry on. Always on everyone rushing around to get interviews or you know, file stories or whatever it is. It was brilliant, and it was kind of great seeing all the people that you know through netball, because a lot of the people I know through netball, you kind of know through like Twitter or their websites or their blogs or whatever. So actually seeing everyone in real life, it was really quite nice, but you didn't really have a chance to chat that much.
All the daily podcast voiced by you.
Oh, yeah, yes. I was listening to them in the mornings and kept forgetting it was me, and then it was freaking me out every time I heard it. I was like, oh, God, that's me.
What were the days like? Were they pretty early start?
Yes. Yeah, so from a sort of TV perspective, the days were intense, actually. So for the first 4 days, of course, we had the two courts. And what that meant was that we had to have two full production trucks, one covering each court. And then within that, you had sort of split shifts, because obviously the first matches were starting early in the morning and they weren't finishing till late. So there was literally a cast of hundreds the first 4 days, doing some on the morning, some on the afternoon. And then on terms of like the on-screen coverage, which you've probably seen, we kind of had two teams, people working across one or two, and for the first 4 days we all did it all. And then when it got down to a single court, which I still can't believe how quickly they did that, there was this incredible time-lapse video of it. It's just mind-blowing how quick, although actually I was on court two on the Monday evening, and those games just finished slightly after court one, and we were sort of packing up as you do and being kind of hurried out because they were so desperate for everyone to get out so they could start changing it all. So yeah, so the first 4 days it was early starts. I think, you know, the first people were sort of in makeup for Sky at 6 a.m. And on air till 7 or even 9, I think it was, on the first night. So it was long old days. And then from the second preliminary stage, we could split a bit more because it was just down to one court, but still, it would still be sort of 6 o'clock, 6:30 call time for the early birds. I was one for the rest of it.
Oh.
To get to make look like you actually are awake, which is always key. God love makeup and hair ladies, they're magicians. Yeah, so then we were split in that regard, but there's still so much going on. So I'd do the early games, finish sort of lunchtime, but then we did a daily show for Snapchat, or there'd be interviews to film or whatever. Whereas Gail, who was doing the afternoon and evening matches, she'd still be doing interviews and features and all sorts in the morning. So even though the on-airs was split a little bit, we were still kind of all going all the time. And you know what? I've got to give the biggest, I can't speak high enough of the fact that Diane Tamsin did all day, every single day. I think they had a couple of mornings off when it was the lower ranked teams. But they put in some serious shifts. I honestly don't know how they did it.
The thing is as well, I saw Pam at one of the hotels that was close by, and she was just relieved to have a bit of hours off in the afternoon as well. So
yeah, but what I always find, and I think a few of the other girls on the team found this as well, when you've been doing live TV, it's such a buzz, it's so constant, and it's kind of a sensory overload because you've got loads of voices in your ear, not just the ones in your own head, but actual people on talkback. And you've got, you know, the games going on in front of you, and you're watching it on monitors as well, so you can see replays. So it's a real sensory overload. So quite often, yeah, you're in that arena environment, so you don't see daylight. So when you finish the afternoon, sometimes you can make the most of it. Other times, I think a few of us went back to the hotel, and there was one day in particular where I just went back, sat on the bed and stared at the wall for about an hour and not doing anything.
Oh,
but it's brilliant. I mean, that's why we do it. Like, it's so much fun, and it was great to be a part of. And I think it, more than anything, it shows what a great team we've got at Sky Netball. From, you know, the people you see on screen to the people directing it, people doing the replays, the runners who are just keeping everyone alive and where they need to be. But it's such a team effort, so it was awesome to be a part of.
I had a really nice chat with Jenny as well, doing the commentary, and she was just pleased to be over here and being involved with it.
Yeah, do you know what? It was so fantastic to have her as part of our coverage, and I think it was kind of a real conscious decision as well to make sure there was a real range of voices in the coverage. So we had the guys you often see in the Super League coverage, but then we had Jenny, which was great to get that Southern Hemisphere perspective, and you know, she's such a phenomenal commentator and so respected that she was just brilliant. And then we had like Dan Ryan, Rupert Cox as well. So getting a real mix in there, I think, was really important and added so much to the coverage. And Jenny was fantastic to be a part of the team and to work with. And we've all got an open invitation, I believe, to go and stay with her forever in New Zealand.
Oh, wow. Excellent.
I'll definitely be taking her up on it.
Another person who is there throughout the Super League, was there throughout the World Cup, was the floor manager in the suit. I don't know his name, but do you want to give him a mention? What's that guy's name?
Oh, yeah, well, there's quite a few. So there's Tony and David, who I think are probably the ones you're talking about, because they both do quite a bit of Super League. So they make sure everything on the floor runs smoothly, from even, you know, telling the umpires when they can blow the whistle to start the quarter, because, you know, all the world broadcasters have to be back from breaks, to getting the player of the match and coach there for interview, to just making sure everyone knows what is happening and when. And they are amazing, really, and make it all run very smoothly.
Proper team effort. I am really slowly catching up on every game as well. One of the post-match interviews that I saw was the one you did with Bongi and Norma.
Yes.
What a delight that was.
Oh my goodness, I think I almost made Norma cry and laugh in the same interview, which might be the proudest moment of my broadcasting career. That was, that was really early on as well in the tournament. Like, it feels like a lifetime. That was so lovely, because that was the day that Bongi got her 100th cap, which is such a phenomenal achievement. And it was really nice as well that we got to interview them together. Which just sort of happened by chance. It was actually, let's have these two together. And, you know, after reflecting on the game and kind of, you know, getting Norma to talk about Bongi, who, you know, is such an inspiration and such an incredible ambassador for our sport. And she was singing her praises. And then, giving Bongi the chance to gush about Norma as well. There was a lot of love and respect. And it was really nice one, actually. It's one of those you kind of look back on and go, oh, that was a nice chat. And it's lovely when you get that human side in as well, and the stories rather than just what's happened on court.
Lots of people got their 100th as well. Caroline O'Hanlon, Claire Max.
Yeah. There were 100th caps all over the place, which is just phenomenal, really. It was fantastic to see. And I think that's one of the great things about netball, really, isn't it? Especially because a lot of these players break into their international teams so young. But they keep on going and they keep on racking up those caps. And it was nice. I felt that every time someone hit a milestone, there was a celebration of it and it was mentioned. And it was, it's important to do, I think, because a lot of these women have been putting in the graft for a very long time and they need to be celebrated as much as physically possible.
Carla got player of the tournament, but I'd have possibly suggested somebody like Laura from New Zealand would have been mine. How about you?
It's a really tough one. I mean, I wouldn't like the job of picking player of the tournament. I personally was quite pleased that it went to Carla, in that I think if it had gone to a player from those teams on the podiums, it's obvious they were, you know, the strongest teams for the tournament. They're going to have very strong players. I think it's really important to recognise that a team like South Africa, who came into this World Cup sort of, you know, people going, oh, they could do something, but not expected to do much, and then finished in the top four. I think it's really important to recognise their players, and there is no doubt in my mind that, you know, if you were doing a world starting seven, I don't know many people that wouldn't put Carla at goal defence.
Yeah.
And she had a phenomenal tournament, and she was a real, you know, leader on the court for them, along with Bongi. And I think as well, I wish I still had a bit of paper from their from the bronze medal match, but if you look at quarters played as well, because of the way the South African team is built and put together, you know, they had to put in some serious time on court in a way that a lot of the players, you know, New Zealand or Australian or even England players, didn't necessarily have to, just by sheer necessity. So I wouldn't have, I mean, almost, you know, there's probably 10 players that easily would have a claim on player of the tournament, but I was really pleased that it was a player that wasn't in the top three teams, but really showed some true, like, world class on court.
Yeah, I think I've got the sheet here, actually. I'll send it over to you.
Oh yeah, thanks. I need more netball stats in my life. I've had a draw for 3 days.
good signs for 2023, though, with the South African teams doing so well and finishing that strongly in the top eight.
Oh, absolutely. So what, all four African nations in that top eight? And it just shows how the world game is changing. And I think it makes it really exciting. If they got the funding and the infrastructure that, you know, the likes of New Zealand and Australia and to an extent England had, it would really change our sport. I actually went along, they had a sort of event to sort of launch South Africa Cape Town 2023, and I think it's going to be a great tournament. They are so passionate about it. There's a real commitment as well that they won't just be, the South African netball won't just be investing in South African netball facilities, but African but facilities throughout all of Africa.
Yeah.
So they're going to put courts, you know, in Malawi, in Uganda, in Zimbabwe, everywhere that netball is played, to try and facilitate, you know, the growth of the game and the improvement of the game. Because that's something that came up a lot, actually, from some of the nations sort of further down the pecking order, was that the players are used to playing on asphalt. So playing on a sprung floor was quite a change. So you need to put in the facility so that they haven't got to adjust to those sort of things when they come to a major tournament.
We know that 1.4 million women and girls across the country are playing netball, but the clear majority are still playing in running shoes or generic trainers, which don't provide the necessary support required to play the fast-moving and dynamic sport that netball is today.
So as a sports injury specialist, one of my biggest bugbears is seeing netball players playing netball in running shoes. The reason this is annoying for me is because running shoes are designed for running in a linear motion. They're not designed for stop, start, change of direction, and looking after the stability of a player as they're coming down from the air. So the benefit of a netball shoe over a running shoe is they're designed to give you more stability and allow you to change direction with better grip, and also allow you to give a more stable knee and ankle position when coming down from a height, therefore reducing the risk of injury in those two areas.
Frankie Wells is taking part in the England net squad, who are flying out to the Worlds in just 4 days' time. She's been telling me more about this version of the game.
It's a game that I don't think anyone would not enjoy. It's go non-stop for the whole time. You're playing in high-tension cricket nets. It's a little bit shorter, a little bit narrower than netball, and there's two disciplines. So there's sixes, where you have six people on court. You have two Ds, you have two Ls, which are called links, and you have two A's, which are attackers. Your links and your attackers can shoot, your defenders aren't, and your L's can shoot from outside the D for 2 points, and your A's can shoot outside for two or inside for one. And there are no centre passes. As soon as a goal is scored, the D from the opposite team takes the ball from the top of the circle and it just goes. You can pass the ball off the net, you can bounce off the net yourself. You can't kick it, because otherwise you have to stand next to the net and say sorry to the net, because that's net contact. But yeah, it's just non-stop. It's the ball just pings up and down. It's so great for fitness, and it's honestly so much fun. Like the first time I played out there, the Kiwi men especially were just pinging off the nets, and they were jumping up and down. I think Paul Crean, one of the Australian men, there's a picture of him, he's actually upside down on the net, and it's so fun.
A lot quicker then, and obviously, to put it mildly, a lot more intense version of the game.
Yeah, completely. You cannot switch off. I mean, if you think you can rest and like have a quick chat with someone, you can't. It's impossible.
You've been part of it before as well, so what kind of experiences did you learn from that?
So the first tour I went on, it was 2013. This will be my fifth tour, and I was so nervous, because obviously I've never competed internationally before, so this was my first exposure at international competition, and it was just another world. Like, you experience athletes in a different environment, and you experience different abilities of athletes that you'd never seen before. And obviously I was 17 when I first went out, and I was such a baby. And like, looking back, I just remember being in awe of this different world of, you know, competition, because I was playing prem when I was that age, and I was like, oh, it's fine, I know how to play. And then you get out there and you're like, geez, it whoa, just goes up and up and up. Yeah, literally, I was like, whoa. So I've been to South Africa twice. I went to Australia and I was in the first ever under 23 mixed team. And then I've been to New Zealand. That was my last tour. And now I'm going back to South Africa and Cape Town.
Despite Tom and Taffy's best efforts as well, though, it's still not played as often here, and maybe a lack of courts as well.
Completely. I mean, Tom and Taffy are the absolute pioneers. They're the reason why I got exposed to the high level, and they are probably one of the main reasons why I got that leap to Super League. And I think the reason why there's no exposure of it, because like you said, there are no courts. I mean, we used to be able to train in London at Canary Wharf and then in Bristol, and now the only really good places is Birmingham. And you know, it's a bit like Super League. Once you cut off that area, so many people are just, well, I can't make the trip all the way up to Birmingham or down to Birmingham. It's just lack of exposure. You know, people don't, word of mouth is the best word of publicity. So it's all about getting it out there and then hoping people will jump on board with it, because it's another sport for kids to play.
And regardless, obviously, of anything that goes on in the Super League, it's a game that you'll personally always love.
Completely. If this was bigger and it was the same as
exposure,
netball,
maybe.
Yeah, if this was bigger and it was the same as netball, I think I would play nets more than I would play netball. Ever since I went to the first training session, I fell in love with it. And I say to everyone I meet, I would rather, if I could, if it was bigger or whatever, I'd rather play nets than netball. And I, hands down, can guarantee that anyone who goes to it would walk away and say, that was so fun. That was so fun. That was so interesting. I've never met anyone who's gone to a net session and been like, it's all right.
These things, though, unfortunately, are still self-funded. And it's not that cheap to get out there, is it?
It's not cheap, you're right. It's completely self-funded. We have to raise money to cover everything. We have to cover the umpire fees, getting to training, the kit. We have to cover the hotel costs, the flight costs. We have to raise money to cover everything. And we really need sponsors. I need sponsors particularly to help me get out there. But it's not just looking at like, oh, get me out there so I can be out there. It's looking at getting more people on board, getting more people interested in the game. Word of mouth is the best type of advertisement and exposure completely. You know, if I go out there and we do well again, it gets in the England Netball magazine, and then England Netball preach it more, and then people look and say, oh, well, I could be a pioneer that like jumped on board and really helped that sport get to the platform it needs to. Because it's another opportunity for young kids, especially girls and boys, to get international experience and prove that they are capable of more than what they think or what someone else has told them that they are. So we need sponsors to get on board and help fund it so all of that can come into play.
How can people maybe get in touch with you and the rest of the team if it sounds something interesting to them?
You can contact us personally. I mean, we're all on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and everywhere. I mean, none of us are not approachable. There's an England Nets website. I know you can email them direct. Just send anyone a message, any one of us. I mean, if anyone wants to get on board or learn any more about it, give me a shout completely. I'm happy to talk about it all day. So you can email me at f.wells96@hotmail.co.uk. You can find me on Instagram, FrankieJWells96. You can find me on Twitter, the same handle, or you can grab me on Facebook. I think I'm Francesca Wells on Facebook. Just look for a tall blonde, you'll see me.
That's excellent. Thanks a lot, Frankie, and best of luck with it.
Thank you so much, Andy.
Thanks for your support, as always. Remember, you can get in touch. We're at The Netball Show on Twitter, and plenty of information online at thenetballshow.co.uk.
The Netball Show with Andy Lamb and Sasha Shipway.